comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call home, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth. We're here because you have a right to know, and frankly, you matter. Let me do just a couple of reminders, a couple of things you need to be reminded of if you've forgotten. The first thing is the K-Files has already gone out this week. We sent it out early, remember? So don't panic when you don't get K-Files over the weekend because we already sent it out earlier this week. But there is something else that's going to be happening this weekend that you do need to be aware of, and that is, this is the first Saturday. Tomorrow will be the first Saturday of this month. And on the first Saturday of each month, I go into the chat room and spend a couple of hours and just hang out, and we have a good time in there. And I invite you to join me in the chat room on tomorrow evening, all right? May the 7th, tomorrow evening. And the time to join me in the chat room is at showtime. So whatever time it is right now in your time zone, that's the time I'll be in the chat room. So I'll be in there for a couple of hours, and, we just chat about whatever you wish to chat about. We have a good time. It's in the members area, so if you're not a member, join. It's only 23 cents a day. And, that's only $6.95 a month, right? So if you're not a member, you can solve that right now. Just go over to my website and join. You'll see on the menu it says join, or there's a big graphic there on the left side about becoming a member. You can click that, and it'll take you to the right place. Real easy to do. And you will enjoy what you find in the members area. I guarantee you, there's a whole lot more in that members area than 23 cents a day worth, okay? If we were charging $15 or $20 a month, that would be about equivalent to the value, something like that. But it's $6.95. It's been $6.95 since we first started. And I hope we never have to go up, and if enough of you join, we will not have to go up, okay? 23 cents a day, come on, that's nothing. So be sure you do that. Now look, even though we've already sent out the K-Files this week, if you're not subscribed, then that means you won't get the K-Files again next week. So subscribe, it's free. It's absolutely free, and most of the people that subscribe stay subscribed forever. We have people that have been with us for 11 years. Well, it'll be 11 years on the 11th of this month, so our 11-year anniversary is coming up. And for 11 years, we've had some folks that are subscribed that have been with us for the whole time. You'll like it, so subscribe, okay? We'll be back right after this.
Well,
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, someone I think that our entire audience, except for maybe some of the new folks, is very well familiar with, and that is Jerry Wills. Jerry Wills is the executive producer for Expeditions TV. He is an explorer. He is also the associate host of the Kevin Smith Show. And Jerry, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you back on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. It's good to hear your voice, and hello to everyone listening.
Jerry, you had an incident that happened at your house, and you live in the Phoenix area. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight, and then some other things beyond that. But let me start off this way. Phoenix has been, for a very long time, sort of a hub of UFO activity, and it really came to the forefront of everyone's attention worldwide in 1997 with a gigantic UFO, in fact, at least three of them, that actually overflew the entire state. Now, it's become known as the Phoenix Lights, but it wasn't just Phoenix. It was the entire length of the state. It went from the north to the south, the entire length of the state. Phoenix area is also a place where there are frequent oddities in the skies. That one was rather spectacular in 1997, but there are frequent oddities in the skies around Phoenix. There's an extremely anomalous area on the south side of Phoenix called South Mountain. and Phoenix is built in a valley that was once inhabited by a very mysterious, very sophisticated civilization that simply vanished. They are the ones who built the canals that Phoenix still uses today. They built those canals in prehistory, and Phoenix still uses those canals today as part of their water system. And Phoenix is home to a man from a faraway planet in the Tau Ceti star system. So let me start out with asking, what's the deal about Phoenix?
Well, I don't know exactly what the deal is. I think maybe it's location, you know, it being in the desert. It was at one time quite isolated away from the rest of the world. To get here was an arduous journey because the roads were terrible, and if you came here in the summertime, it would just be a very hot, hard, difficult experience. But if you take a look back through time, there are quite a few things that have happened in the Phoenix and southern Arizona regions that really defy explanation with conventional history. Some of the things that have been found here are, well, they're still being debated as to what the reality is. There were some Roman crosses dug up down in Tucson that had an inscription, a story written on them. There are those portals around South Mountain that I believe are still active. There's all kinds of drawings up there. And then, of course, back in most recent history, and I don't know the details on this exactly, but there was apparently a huge UFO that crashed right into the Dreamy Draw area and ended up on a ranch in the north part of Phoenix, which now is part of Scottsdale. Just a lot of strangeness. There's something about this area. There's something that has a magnetic, not really like magnetism, but there's a spiritual magnetism about the place. It's drawn a lot of people to this area for whatever reason. Maybe it's because it's the desert, but there's something else about this place that just is really hard to pinpoint to really describe adequately.
Well, I can certainly attest to the fact that there's no way to adequately describe summer in Phoenix. I mean, really. That's unreasonable. When you get to summertime, before you get out of summertime, you're absolutely convinced someone in Phoenix history really made God really mad. And summer is what he does to Phoenix because of it. It is awful in the summertime.
Yeah, it is. It can be 125, 130 degrees in the sun. I mean, the shade, you're looking at, I don't know, 115 or so. But it's really hot. And recently, it's been extraordinarily dry. I think our humidity yesterday was 2%. Today, it probably was somewhere around 5%.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys are part of that extreme drought that it's Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, all across the South, an extreme drought. And yet there are places, there are holes in that where they've just gotten a lot of rain and a lot of storms, like the Dallas, Texas area. But just a few miles to the west of there, and a few miles to the east, it's that extreme drought.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about what happened.
Right.
And let me say, folks, the event that we're going to talk about is just one of two significant aerial phenomenon events that took place in Phoenix within the last 7 days. And the other one we will talk about on Monday night, and I will have some video of that one for you. But this one, Jerry, happened right in your neighborhood, happened right at your house, didn't it?
Yeah, and we were completely unaware of it going on, of course. You know, you'd have to be outside watching the sky all the time to see all the things that are happening. And there's a lot that happens around here, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
The event basically, in an encapsulated form, will be in that way, is that our son Bryce and his co-worker, Xavier, were coming to our house. Xavier driving, using a drop off Bryce. This was about 8 o'clock, 8:15 in the evening. As they were... Go ahead.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. As they were coming home, Bryce noticed, and Xavier also noticed, something falling, you know, out of the sky. And they're watching this as it gets larger and larger. He could probably tell you much better than myself, but he said it got larger and it came down, and it was within 100 feet, you know, not that far off the rooftops. It was a solid object, self-luminous, and spherical. He said it looks like the crystal ball, Dad, because when he held it out at arm's length, it was the same size as this crystal ball that I have, which is probably about, I'm guessing, 7-8 inches in diameter. This didn't have a trail behind it. It didn't have no trail, no debris, nothing of that nature. Just came down and swooped down and then slowed up and casually moved across the rooftops until it was out of his sight. It was, as I said, self-luminous, and it was a very interesting color of blue, very much like the blue color from, he pointed out a bottle, a water bottle, and he said the same color as that. It's a kind of a real pretty blue color, but it had well-defined edges, and as I said twice before, self-luminous.
How far away was he now? You said it's about the size of the crystal ball that you have, if you hold the crystal ball at arm's length. But how far from him was this object?
Well, it was about, from what I understood, it was probably between a half a block and a block away. And that would put it at about 30 foot in diameter.
Now, was this object did it come down over your house?
Not specifically over our house. No, it came down over this neighborhood. They saw it descending down out of the sky rapidly, as I understand it. And again, you know, he may have more detail on this than that he can relate. But it came down and leveled off and flew right across the tops of the houses.
Now, Xavier saw this as well, right?
Yeah, he did. And he was a bit in denial about it, as Bryce was explaining it to us, because he just didn't know what he had just seen.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty shook up by it. He says, you don't see things like that. Xavier is from India. Mm-hmm. He's probably in his, from what I've been told, he's in his mid-40s.
Uh-huh. And did he come to a point where he said, yeah, I saw it, or is he still in denial?
No, he had a conversation with Bryce yesterday, or the day before, I don't remember which, but it was one of those days, and he said, well, my dad's going to be on the Kevin Smith Show, and I'm going to talk about it when I get home, and they would like for you to tell everyone what you saw. And he was like, really? So, as far as I know, he's interested in talking, but we just have to be able to get a hold of him. Because I, well, you know me, I took a look at the time, and I'm not thinking we're on daylight savings time, because it never changes here in Phoenix. So I told them between 8 and 9, probably 8:30-ish our time. Well, and that's going to be towards the end of the show.
Yeah. Well, we'll try. You know, I've tried twice to get in touch with Xavier. You provided his telephone number, and so far I haven't got an answer. But we'll try during one of the breaks to get him on the phone and get him hooked up here. All right, so when Bryce came in the house, what did he tell you? What was his reaction to this?
Well, we were watching TV, and he rushed in. He says, oh, my gosh, you're not going to believe what's going on outside. And so we muted the TV. It's like, yeah, what's going on? And he said, well, and then he told us all about it. So I immediately went outside and just stood watch for a while. But he said that it was so low that it went over the tops of the houses and beyond his ability to see. And it never came back, at least in the half hour or so that I was outside watching.
Now, was he was this thing still visible to him when he got out of the car?
He said that when he pulled up, that it had gone beyond the rooftop, and he couldn't see it any longer.
Okay, but was he aware of any sound?
He said that there was no sound, and he didn't get a chance before it went out of sight. He was outside the car. He said there was no sound, just smooth movement.
Okay, now this thing was self-luminous. It's about 30 feet in diameter. It's self-luminous, and it's shaped like a ball.
Yeah, it's spherical.
Okay, being self-luminous, is it casting light down onto the ground or not affecting the lighting on the ground at all?
I believe from what he was saying, and, you know, keeping in mind that it was just past dusk, it was just starting to get, you know, dark. It was like 80% dark.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that he noticed that there was any light that was hitting the ground. That's something that we could ask him and find out. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that I asked him that specifically.
Do you know of anyone else in the area that has seen this?
No, I don't think there's anyone else that saw it. We do have helicopters fly over here periodically, and had someone taken a look out, they might have just dismissed it as a helicopter if they didn't really stop and take a clear look at it. But we haven't heard from anyone that they saw anything.
I'm not going to identify here on the air what the other event is that we're going, I'm going to be talking about on Monday, but you know, because I've shared it with you and I sent you a link to the video. Rather spectacular, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that was absolutely, it's something that gets your attention big time.
Mm-hmm. And yet, and this is the point, as spectacular as that is, and these guys got it on video as they're driving down the highway, that, and you, there's other traffic in this video, you can hear the other traffic going by.
Yeah,
so you know other people had to have had the opportunity to see this. Nevertheless, nobody's talking about it. It's not in the news there, even though this video has been sent to Fox 10 News in Phoenix. And I know there are people at Fox 10 that listen to this show. So Fox 10, we scooped you on this, but you got a shot at it. You can air your report about it over the weekend before I do the show on Monday. Nobody's talking about it. And here's the point, Jerry. This stuff happens all the time. People have the opportunity to see it, and they don't see it. And then they say, well, if there's all these UFOs, how come I never saw one?
Yeah.
You know, you could set off a nuke next to some people and they'd never notice it. And, I mean, you know, if they had been out at White Sands during all those nuke tests, there are some people that just, they'd say, what big boom? I didn't hear a big boom. And they just don't notice.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's the case here. You know, there are helicopters with bright searchlights that go over. But those lights are white. I mean, they're very bright. You know what those look like.
Well, plus the Phoenix police helicopters are extremely loud. They don't have any stealth mode.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Kevin, I just saw that Bryce walked in. So,
all right. Well, we'll be going to a break here in about 12 minutes, 10 minutes. Seconds. So in about, in a few seconds, we're headed into break. And during that break, perhaps you can brief him and put him on the phone, and we'll talk to him on the other side of the break.
All right, very good.
All right, we'll be back right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Jerry Wills. Jerry is the associate host of this show. He is also the executive producer for Expeditions TV. He is also an explorer and a lot of other things. And we're talking about this incident that happened, this UFO incident that happened above the houses right there in his neighborhood. I don't know. It was witnessed by his son, Bryce, and a co-worker, Xavier or Javier. I would say Javier because I did not know he was from India. I thought it was Spanish. But perhaps it's Xavier or Xavier. But anyway, they saw it as Bryce was arriving home from work. And so I don't know right now whether I've got Jerry on the line or whether I've got Bryce on the line, so let's find out. Who have I got on the line here?
It's me, Kevin.
Okay.
What I just found out is the reason you weren't able to reach Javier is because he was working, and when they're at work, he and Bryce both have their phones turned off. He's on his way home now.
Okay, well, during that the next break, I will attempt to get in touch with, is it Javier or Xavier?
I call him Javier, but Bryce says his name is Xavier.
Well, whatever Xavier says, that's the way it is. I mean, even though it's spelled Xavier, if he said his name's Bill, we'll call him Bill. However he says it, it's good for us. Is Bryce available to talk with us about this incident?
Sure, let me go find him.
All right. And, ladies and gentlemen, this kind of thing is not rare in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area. It's not rare at all. Sounds like we're getting to wherever Bryce is. Maybe not. All right. If you live in the Phoenix area, and we have quite a number of people who listen to this show who do live in the Phoenix area, all it takes to see these weird occurrences is look up and pay attention. Now, let me give you a quick example. We'll just use the word ice cream. Now, if to you, you know that ice cream is a vanilla, raspberry, chocolate dipped cone, and that's all you think about whenever somebody says ice cream. Well, then whenever someone comes in and they've got some strawberry ice cream, and they say, there's some ice cream over there if you want some, you go over and look, and you don't see any vanilla, raspberry, chocolate dipped cones. And so you come back and say, well, where's the ice cream? And they say, well, it's on the table. It's in those dishes on the table. And they look over there and they say, I don't see any ice cream. That's exactly what happens with this UFO phenomenon. People have a preconceived notion in their minds of what a UFO is supposed to be. Okay, and usually it's something out of the comic books. It just means something that's flying in the sky and you don't know what it is. It doesn't look like anything man-made, conventional. And so that is an unidentified flying object. Okay, if you go outside in Phoenix at nighttime especially, but a lot of times in the daytime, a lot of times right in midday, you go out and just look up and look around the sky, sooner or later you are going to see a UFO. There are just a lot of UFO sightings in the Phoenix area for some reason. Okay, let me check and see, Jerry or Bryce, are you with us?
I'm here. This is Bryce.
This is Bryce?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. How are you?
Fine. You know, you sound just like your dad. You even laugh like your dad. Okay, Bryce.
I just got home, so go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, you were coming home from work. What night was this?
It should have been Wednesday night. It was around, let's say, about 8:05.
Okay.
I was heading about between the half-mile point from where I live to my house, and I'll tell you, it was about Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bryce, have you ever seen a UFO before?
I have only one time in my life, and that was when it was inexplainable. I mean, we had thousands of people over Lima. It was in October. It was a big sighting of thousands of things in the sky. There were lights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looked like stars. Looked like stars in broad daylight because there were so many of them spread about. But no, before that, I've never, ever seen a UFO in my life.
Okay, and this is the first one you've seen in the United States, right?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So you're coming home from work. Describe for us what you saw. Your dad described, but I want to hear from you. What did you see?
Well, I pretty much, you know, figured it was a light, you know. It was a light, but, I mean, I thought it was a shooting star. It was hovering over the houses to my right. So I was in the passenger side of a car. The driver saw it as well. I mean, it was so bright. But it was
bluish white. When I got a chance to even think about it, I mean, I didn't think of it as a shooting star because normally they burn up in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they don't tend to hover.
Well, not that either. I mean, it was traveling very fast, but at the same time, you know, it did vary in speed, and it kind of arced up a little bit and then just went straight wherever it went, whether it went down or across or however it flew. But
all right. Now, when you saw this, although you were present in Lima, Peru, when there was a very famous sighting of a fleet of these UFOs, but this is the first one that you'd seen in the United States. It's right there in your neighborhood where you live. So how did it affect you? How did you respond to it?
Well, again, I mean, I really approached it like it was a shooting star. I even, when I first came home, I was like, Dad, you know, I just saw a meteor. But the problem was is that, of course, as it was going over the houses, it was about the size of a grapefruit or a softball,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, I mean, it was about an inch hovering over the houses, you know, as I was looking, you know.
What made you decide it was not a meteor?
Only because it didn't have any type of tail, you know. I mean, I've seen a lot of shooting stars. I've seen things, you know, high up in the Andes as we traveled throughout Peru, but they would have a big, long tail behind them. And this was actually so luminescent, and it was just hovering across the houses in a very parallel way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you say it was very close down to the roofs of the houses, right?
Correct.
Was it shining any of its light down on the houses?
No. I mean, it actually had a glow about itself. But, I mean, even when I looked back and thought about that, what I, you know, must have seen could have been a meteor from my previous experiences looking out into the sky, this one did not have a tail, of course, but at the same time it gave off light of like a bluish, whitish color.
Mm-hmm. But this light did not illuminate the houses below it, right?
Well, no. I mean, we're looking about, maybe it was about a block away.
Mm-hmm.
But since it was above the houses, it was above about an inch from my view, from the tops of the houses. It's just hovering right over the houses. It was not, I cannot tell whether or not it was illuminating those houses from below.
And did you notice any noise, any sound?
No, there's none at all. But not only that, we were also listening to music in the car.
Okay. What was Javier's, or Xavier, what was his response to that?
Well, he had the same response as I did. We both thought it was a shooting star. And I was like, Xavier, come on, let's go follow it, because those meteors are worth quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
So he was like, well, you can go look on it on your own. But what it was is that at the end of the day, you know, I called him back and I was like, you know what? What did you think about what we just saw? And he's like, well, I want to tell you, Bryce, because, you know, he's a great observer. He'll tell you things how they are because he's got his own opinion, and he'll tell it as it is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling me as well that he noticed that there was no way that it could have been a meteor because of the fact that it didn't have any type of tail. It wasn't burning up as it entered the atmosphere, or it wasn't even, it was already here. It was already within our atmosphere, and it was just hovering, like I said, just skimming the top of the houses.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll tell you the same thing, that these type of features were what I described, you know.
Do you think what you saw was not from Earth, or do you think it's from Earth?
Well, that I cannot distinguish, because obviously, you know, we have a lot of things here on Earth that are unexplained already, but definitely from my understanding on how the world is, it's something not of this world.
Do you think that you've heard all the stories about Phoenix? Now, this is the first time you've seen a UFO in the Phoenix area. You've heard all the stories about the many, 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 many UFO sightings in Phoenix. Of course, the big famous one in 1997. What do you think the deal is about Phoenix? Why Phoenix?
Well, I mean, if there's anything unique about Phoenix itself, it's because of a lot of different, what we call ancient civilizations that have lived here before. I've done a lot of research about Phoenix and how there's been a lot of different, past civilizations here. And I believe that if there was any type of influence then with the people and how they lived, then of course there would be some influence now. So it doesn't surprise me that I see many type of sightings around here, not myself, but obviously now that I've seen it for myself, it doesn't surprise me.
You know, one of the interesting things about Phoenix is the people that are referred to as the Hohokam. And what's interesting about them is that, first of all, that's not the name of a tribe. That is a Pima Indian word that means they who have gone.
Wow.
So it's not the name of a tribe. It's just there were some people here and now they're gone. Now, what's interesting about those people is that just to the south, you get into the area down into Mexico, you get into the area where they're building these great monumental cities, you know, the pyramids and the great monuments that are there, the Mayan, the Inca, the Aztec, and so forth. But these people didn't do that. However, they did do something that was quite remarkable, and that is, for whatever reason, they chose the most god-awful place on earth, and they built canals. They had a sophisticated understanding of hydrology, and they built canals to bring water into that valley, and, The valley itself, the soil, is excessively fertile if it has water.
Correct.
So they seem to have known that, and they brought water into this valley. Bryce, you hang on. We'll be back right after this break. As Leslie said, welcome back to the world's hottest talk show host. It is the world's hottest talk show, for sure. Bryce, I've got a surprise for you.
Tell me.
I have Xavier on the line. Are you with us, Xavier?
Yes, I am.
Okay, now, Xavier, let me ask you before we go any further. We've had a debate here about how to say your name. Okay, is it Javier, Xavier, or Xavier?
I don't have a preference. People call me different names.
How do you say it?
I said Xavier.
Okay. Xavier, if you will, I'd like for you to share with us this incredible event that happened with you and Bryce as you were taking Bryce home on Wednesday. Just describe what you saw, if you will.
Well, we were driving together and I was giving a ride to Bryce, taking him home. And all of a sudden we saw this bright light without a tail, just like a falling star. Coming in a very, how should I say it, in a very, utmost speed, you know? Like a shooting star, but it had no tail. But it felt like something coming down quickly, so fast.
Did you at the time? Did you think it was a? Did you think it was a shooting star?
For me, it was. I was just thinking about a shooting star because I've been to this many other times. It's not the first time I've seen one like that.
Uh huh.
So for me, it was nothing of an incredible thing. I said, "Oh, it must be a shooting star," and that's it. But the only thing that really surprised me was it had no tail.
I'm trying to adjust the volume because we can barely hear you, Xavier, but we can hear you, but just barely. And when I turn it up, you're hearing it and the audience is hearing feedback, and I'm just trying to adjust that so that we can hear you properly. Okay. Now, after you saw this and you went home, you had some time to think about it. Did you decide it was not a shooting star?
Not really. I never even gave it a thought again until Bryce brought it up and said, "Hey, this could be something we have never experienced before." So I just didn't give it a real thought about it.
Okay, now, since he brought it up and you thought about it, do you think it was a shooting star? Or do you think it was perhaps some type of unexplained object in the sky?
That's what I'll call it, an unidentified UFO or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It must be a piece of meteor or something like that.
Have you ever seen a UFO before?
I can't say I did because I have seen many, many times this kind of light just falling fast. But I have never thought of it as an thought of a very incredible event. I never gave it a real serious thought.
Okay, now when you saw this, it was falling and then it stopped falling. Is that right?
It just disappeared among the bushes, among the trees.
Okay, now if it's fall, there's a difference between falling and flying. If it's falling, it's coming from up, headed to down. If it's flying, it's going from left to right or from front to back across the sky. Which was it doing?
It wasn't flying. It was falling.
Okay. It was falling.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then did it hit the ground?
I didn't see hitting the ground. I just saw it disappeared behind the trees because we were on the road driving, so we had huge trees in front of us. But it just disappeared.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused because that sounds like it was traveling parallel to the ground.
No, it wasn't traveling, it was falling.
It was falling. Okay. So, what do you think? It did not have a tail behind it. What do you think? Is this thing a meteor or is it a UFO?
Definitely go for a meteor.
How could you have a meteor with no tail behind it?
I'm just guessing, sir. I'm not so sure. I'm not a very person, I think.
Yeah.
So I can't really describe it as a meteor, but definitely it wasn't a shooting star. That I can tell you, guarantee.
Okay. Well, you know, a meteor and a shooting star are the same thing.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Okay. All right. Well, Xavier, I want to thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, he has a different view of it, Bryce. What do you think?
Well, I think it's great. You know, everybody's got their own opinion of things, but at the same time, you know, if he rules out that it's not a shooting star and it's not a meteor, you know, obviously because it had no tail, again, you know, he was there with me, so everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
Mm-hmm. I use the example of ice cream. I think you heard me use that example, right?
Yes.
But this, we find this when we talk to people about UFOs. We find that they have the ice cream syndrome. Everybody does. And, well, almost everybody. I mean, the vast majority of people have the ice cream syndrome, where they have a thing in their mind that says, okay, if it's like that, it would be a UFO. If it's not like that, well, it's not a UFO, therefore it must be something natural, something else. And, you know, and this is very, very, very common. This is very, 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 very common. But there is a guy in the Phoenix area by the name of Jeff Woolline. And Jeff Woolline has videotaped some of the most bizarre stuff in the skies over Phoenix, specifically around South Mountain. And if you had a notion in your mind that a UFO has to look a certain way, you would never look at these and say, okay, that's a UFO. Even though it's in the sky and it's something that is quite obviously not anything you've seen before. But right. If it doesn't fit your definition of ice cream, it's not ice cream, you know? And that's very, very common. There is the other extreme, though, Bryce. The other extreme is everything in the sky is a UFO. And you've probably run into people like that. You know, some brand new airplane that they've never seen before, and oh my God, we're being invaded from space. Everything they see is a UFO. So there's the two extremes, that you have the ice cream syndrome on one end, and then everything's a UFO on the other end. Where do you fall in that?
Well, where I fall in is like, just like you're saying about the ice cream, I say the same thing as if you're looking at a white wall, you know? If you're looking at a white wall and you don't notice that anything's coming through the wall because you're not aware that it's anything different from a white wall, then I would just have this ice cream notion that unless there's a little bit of ice cream there, and for example, there's a bunch of dishes, and you said earlier that if there was strawberry ice cream that somebody brought to the table, I would look for those types of dishes where, I mean, I want to try to compare it to the same, but I never think it's going to happen.
All right, we got to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guests this evening, of course, so far have been Jerry Wills, his son Bryce, Bryce's co-worker Xavier, and I want to thank Xavier and Bryce for being with us, and I think Jerry is back online with us now. Are you with us, Jerry?
Hello, Kevin. I'm here.
Man, I tell you what, you and your son sound so much alike.
Good heavens.
Yeah, when he laughed, he even sounded like you when you laugh. Have I ever met Bryce? I don't think I have.
No, I don't think you have.
Yeah. Does he look like you?
Well, he's about 6'3", 6'4". People say that he looks like me. He's actually not my, you know, my blood son. He's from a previous marriage that Kathy had. But at any rate, he looks a lot like me, everyone says.
How about that? Wow. I used an example of ice cream. I have no idea whether you were able to hear that. Did you hear it?
I was listening. Yeah.
Okay. And you know, I've talked to a lot of people during the week, not just on the show, but during the day, I'm on the telephone. I talk to a lot of people about a lot of different things that they have seen and experienced and so forth. And it really is kind of like what I described. It's sort of like ice cream. But, you know, I find the same thing was true when I was doing criminal investigations as a cop. It's an ice cream syndrome. People see what is in their mind to see. And they perceive it that way. And if it's totally outside of what's in their mind, then a lot of times they just don't see it at all. And, you know, it's... they've got it in their mind that ice cream is vanilla raspberry chocolate dipped cones, and you know, instead it's somebody serves strawberry in a dish and they don't see any ice cream.
Yeah, I know, I've run into that too, you know, people with preconceived notions on what is and isn't supposed to be. The you know, knowing Bryce the way I do, he's always interested in unusual and unique things. I mean, he's living in Peru for 5 years doing some pretty interesting investigations down there for Lost Cities. But I've not really ever seen him go out and just look for UFOs. He's, you know, he's like, well, I'd like to see one, but who knows?
Okay, now... Let me ask you a question or two here about Jerry Wills.
All right.
You're aware of the fact that long before you told me about your background, I had already told the producer of this show that if I ever met anybody that was an extraterrestrial, it was you.
Yes.
You didn't tell me about your background until I told you that. I told you, you know, Jerry, if I ever met anybody that's an extraterrestrial, it's got to be you. And then you told me your background, and I sat on it. I didn't go on the air and talk about it. I waited until you decided to come out and talk about it.
Right.
So let's talk about that just a little bit, because what you told us on this show is that every 10 years... you get a visit from people from your home planet.
So far as I know, they're from my home planet. I don't know specific details on where they're from, except for what they tell me.
Okay, fair enough. But this happens every 10 years, right?
Well, it was happening every 10 years, Kevin, but the last time it was supposed to happen... nothing occurred. There was no visitation, nothing. And, of course, that was 2001 on September 11th. And so I figured that had something to do with it.
Okay, so you've got one coming up September 11, 2011, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Do you look forward to these, or is it something that you become... anxious about? Do you have anxiety over it, or is it something you look forward to?
Well, I look forward to it. I don't have any anxiety at all. If it happens again, I do have some very direct questions that I'm going to be asking. One of them being, are you going to be on the Kevin Smith Show with me?
That's good, because I'm quite serious and I want to interview them.
Yeah, well, I'm quite serious. You know, in my mind, this is a very real thing. And, of course, I know for everyone listening, it's a subjective thing. It's not something that you can put a pin on the map with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's been one of these deals that, you know, when it didn't happen last time, it left me a bit confused. But, of course, the world events took a dramatic turn towards some rather ugly things. And the interesting thing that's going on now around this birth date, which really isn't my birthday, but it's just the day that was assigned as my birthday back when I first, you know, got my papers, so to speak, at Fort Knox, is that there's a comet or perhaps it's a brown dwarf, or who knows what this thing is, but it's going to be at its perigee to the sun, which is closest to the sun, on September 11th. And I've been taking stock of the information that's available out there, and some of the things that I've been finding out about this have certainly, they've certainly gotten my attention.
This is comet, they're calling it a comet, Elnin, or Elnin. That's an interesting name, by the way. I don't know the etymology of that name. I don't know from what language it comes. Do you?
No, I really don't. It seems like I read something about it, but I don't recall what the details were.
It came into alignment with the Earth and the Sun on the day of the earthquake and tsunami that hit Japan.
Yeah, also the same earthquake that hit Christchurch, New Zealand. It was in direct alignment, and also the one that hit Chile.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, there are the debunkers that say that, that's just nonsense. It has nothing to do with it. But, you know, Jerry, I have repeatedly said that any large body that gets close to the Earth has got to, you know, it's got its own forces and fields around it. And those forces and fields have to have some interaction with the Earth. And I've heard people say, well, in fact, they've said it on this show. Well, you know, it would have to be very powerful, very powerful, to upset the Earth's magnetic field. Well, that's nonsense. You can overpower the Earth's magnetic field with a handheld magnet. It's very simple. You've got all kinds of little iron filings that gravity is hanging on to, and they're on your desk, and gravity's pulling them down to your desk, right? Just pass a handheld magnet over it and see how many you pick up. You overpower the force of gravity with a handheld magnet. It's a very weak force.
Yeah, it's spread out over a very large area. And
yes.
That's why a lot of folks have trouble getting their mind around that.
Yeah, well, you know, we think it must be a very powerful force because it holds everything down on the Earth. I think the way to think of it is you got gravity and you got no gravity or almost no gravity out in space. How much gravity does it take to overpower no gravity? Well, if we assign numbers to it and out in space we'll say is 0.000001. And then on Earth, you have 0.1. That's very little gravity. But it's way more powerful than no gravity.
Well, exactly. And what the thing that's going on right now with the CERN experiment is they're looking for the Higgs boson. And part of what's going on with the search for the Higgs boson has to do with getting finer and finer detail on these tiny subatomic particles,
mm-hmm.
trying to explain why gravity exists. And one of the emerging theories has to do not with magnetism at all, but with the density of matter as it interacts with the Higgs boson, how the Higgs boson actually causes an accumulation of a charge at the atomic level, causing greater mass to occur.
Well, it seems to me that if you have a large body coming through, and it comes through, I mean, it doesn't have to pass so close to Earth that we can reach out and touch it. It just has to be relatively close to Earth. It can even be several million miles away, but the fields around it bump against the fields of Earth, and you would get some kind of disturbance here. It doesn't take a lot to create a lot of chaos on the planet. It just doesn't take much force at all to release great energies, for instance, earthquakes. And so I would think that this comet Elnin certainly has the potential, anyway, of being kind of a chaos creator for us. And it appears that it is doing it. It appears to me that it is doing it. Or am I reaching there, Jerry?
No, I don't think you're reaching at all. The one thing that I learned from James what is his name? Oh, golly. The name escapes me. Anyway, he's a physicist, and I'm sure you'd recognize his name.
McGahee?
He basically had told Kathy and I, when we were doing part of our investigation into an anomaly down in South America, that if an object comes into our solar system, it causes a shift in the capacitive nature of our solar system. There is a solid, or not a solid, but a steady state of electrical charge within a solar system, and this would discharge it, causing it to absorb that charge. And, of course, the solar system is looking to regain its balance. One of the things I'm wondering about is if this, you know, well, it's not an if, it definitely is there. So it has come in, and it obviously has done something to the solar capacitor, the charge in that solar system, our solar system. If that charge has been disrupted, what would that do to the sunspot activity? And I'm thinking that it would cause the sunspot activity to diminish, not increase. But as it comes closer into the sun, I think that it would cause the solar activity to become much more violent, because now you've got something that has a high charge on it, a great density, and it's coming in close to the sun, and it's going to be quite close to the sun before it starts coming back out on its orbit and crossing Earth's trajectory.
There are people who are saying that this thing, El Nin, is the same thing as Nibiru. What do you think?
Well, I'm not, you know, I'm not 100% sure what this is. I just find it incredibly curious that its perigee is going to occur on September 11th. The contacts that I've had have always suggested that that was a day for me to pay very close attention to, you know, in the years leading up to 2012. So I of course paid quite close attention last time after seeing what happened, and now I'm paying pretty close attention to this. I don't know if it's Nibiru. I don't know if it is an extinction level event comet. I don't know what this is, but I'm certainly watching with great interest.
Well, whatever it is very active. Look, the whole solar system appears to be heating up. The whole solar system.
Oh, that would be the result of the dynamic change in the capacitance of the solar capacitor.
Do you think that NASA knows what this really is?
I think so. One of the things that I saw recently that really got my attention, aside from the fact of the September 11th thing, is if you take a look at the movie Deep Impact, when the kid starts talking to the teacher and saying, "Hey, look, I just found a comet. How about that?" And they're calling it Ellie. And then, of course, through the rest of that movie, ELE is an acronym for Extinction Level Event, ELE. Then you take the next movie, and that one would be 2012, the one that was just recently in theaters. It was like last year, I think, or thereabouts. you watch what's going on in the beginnings of that movie, and there's something very strange that most people have never paid any attention to. I didn't until it was pointed out to me. What it is that you have an object, and it appears in several of the different frames, like Saturn, and then there's the object. And then something else, and there's the object. And then there's the sun, and then there's the same object. This is starting to be very reminiscent of the movie Numbers, when Nicolas Cage is watching on TV, and there's a Gulf oil disaster taking place, and the date that's being shown there and the details are being shown there are identical to the date and details that it actually happened.
So how would you explain that? Just a coincidence?
I find it difficult to think of it as a coincidence. It's just too strange.
So what do you think? Somebody has prior knowledge and they're releasing this to the fiction writers?
Well, I know that sounds a little far-fetched, but I just don't know how to explain it. It's just very strange to me that this movie would come out showing this kind of thing with that date, and then here we are, what it was, a year and a half later, I think, and these events unfolded. You have 2012, and it shows some object coming in through our solar system. And now here we are a year and a half later, and now we have some object coming into our solar system. It just baffles me.
You've heard me say, Jerry, both on the air and in person, and just personal conversations that we've had, that I don't think we're going to have an Earthbuster on December the 21st, 2012. But I do think that we will have a great many calamities of increasing intensity and perhaps increasing frequency leading up to 2012, leading up to December the 21st, 2012. I don't think there's an Earthbuster coming, but I could be wrong about that. And I'd like to know what you think. You think there's an Earthbuster coming?
Well, I would like to think not. And, you know, in our conversations, both public and private, on the air and off the air, I've been a proponent of letting people feel better about themselves and seeing some positive aspects of the future instead of being, you know, threatened or feeling worried about, you know, the possibilities and all the things they read about online and all the conspiracy theory things and all this. But, you know, information like this, it has me focused on it a little bit more than some other things because I'm really curious, what does this mean? There are a series of coincidences here that seem to defy reason. And I don't know if it's an Earthbuster or not, but I think whatever's going to happen, it's going to initiate a change of some sort that's going to be appreciable.
I think so. I think so, but I don't think it's an Earthbuster. You know, the end of time, the curtain comes down and Earth is over. I don't think that. I think we are seeing the beginnings already of what this thing is probably going to cause, and I think we're going to see increased numbers and increased intensity of calamities as this event plays out. But I think when it's all over, there will be some land masses that aren't land anymore. There will be some places that were underwater that will be above water now, some new land masses. There will be a great many people that don't make it, and there will be a great many people that do. And we will sort of pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and move forward. I don't think that it's the end of time. I don't think it's the end of everything.
I think the end of time, Kevin, is very subjective.
I don't think it exists.
No, I don't think so either. But the when people ask me about this, I refer to the earthquake in Japan. That was the end time scenario for those folks, and it was just horrific, and it continues to be quite bad. Same true for Christchurch or for Chile.
Mm-hmm.
We were living in Lima. There was a tremendous earthquake days after we left in 2006 that just completely decimated areas in Lima and south of Lima. So, you know, we're seeing the end of days subjectively being called the end of days, meaning the end of what's ordinary.
Well, I think we're seeing the end of this era.
Yeah, exactly.
And when this era goes, I think one of the things that happens here, and lots of people would disagree with this. I understand that. Folks, I understand what I'm about to say is controversial. But I think what happens here is the death grip that the current elite have on every government on this planet gets broken, because all the toys, all the secrets, all the gadgets by which they maintain that grip, that control, I think all of those are going to get nullified. You know, let me give you an example. Let's say that there's a politician and the elite decide they're going to groom him for this or that or the other thing, and he wants to be straight. He wants to represent the people that elected him. And they come to him and they show him pictures of his affair that he had 2 years ago. And they say, we're going to make it public, and we're going to ruin you politically. Well, you know what? After all of that, that of course gets him in line and he cooperates with them. But after all these calamities hit, nobody's going to give a rat's rear. Nobody's going to care about that. They're going to care about, can we pull ourselves back together here?
Yeah, I agree. I know exactly where you're coming from, and I agree completely.
And I see that as a very positive thing. It breaks the iron grip of the sinister elite, and freedom is restored. I think that's a great thing. We'll be back right after this. Listening to the Kevin Smith Show, let me remind you, if you have not done so, you need to become a member. You need to join so you get all the goodies. It's free to listen, but man, we've got a storehouse of goodies for you for only $6.95 a month as a member, including you get to watch the show live every night. And let me tell you, when you join, we don't make you go through a full body scan. We don't do an unconstitutional grope search. It's really, really, really private and very, very, very simple, okay? So you go ahead and join and start enjoying all of the benefits of the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and Jerry and I are talking about this comet or brown dwarf or whatever it is that's coming in. In fact, it's in. And it is Elnin. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But you know, Jerry, when we went to break, I was saying, you know, I think that whatever calamities are coming, and look, we know from geological record that these calamities happen on a sort of cyclical basis. So whatever calamities are coming, I don't think it's an earth buster. I think it's going to be a calamity. It's going to be a great catastrophe for sure. But it's not going to destroy the earth. And a great many people are going to survive it all. And they are going to be free. They're going to be free. That will be a novel situation for a lot of people on this planet, including a lot of people in the United States. They're going to be free because the power of the elite will be broken. There's two ways to be free, Jerry. You may agree or disagree, and you chime in. Look, secrets are power. Knowledge is freedom. So if all the secrets become known, then there's freedom. There's no more secrets to hold over anybody. But there is another way, and that is where the secrets just don't freaking matter. And if if they just don't matter anymore, there's no power to hold over people.
Exactly right. You nailed it, Kevin. And that's what I've been trying to, give folks an idea of. You know, I tell folks knowledge is power, but you're right. Freedom is ultimately power. But understanding what freedom is, you know, the more you understand how valuable it is, the more power you have. And more power you're probably going to need to hold on to it.
Well, knowledge is freedom. And, a lot of people try to make something really spiritual out of absolutely everything Jesus ever said. And I'm not denigrating Jesus, okay? So don't get upset with me, folks. But look, don't you think Jesus ever wrote down something like a grocery list to go to the market? I doubt that grocery list ranks as holy. You know, you think he ever wrote a letter home to mom? Hi, mom. Just want to say hello and tell you I love you and I'm doing well. I'm sure he wrote some letters home to mom. But that's not scripture. And some things he said were just very practical. And one was, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. When you know, you're free. It's the secrets that they use to maintain power.
Exactly. I agree.
All right, Jerry, I want to go back to this UFO that Bryce saw.
All right.
Do you think there's any connection between that and your upcoming scheduled meeting with these people from ostensibly your home planet?
Well, I was wondering about that myself. You know, in the past, there have been some unusual events like this that have taken place. And I'm talking 20, 30 years ago. There have been a couple of unusual things that have been duplicated in the past. I think it was before. It must have been after this. Surely after this. And one of those things that was duplicated is that really late at night, 20 years ago, perhaps, there was a series of events that took place, which were just really bright lights, amber-colored lights that, you could see light in the other room. It was just lit up brightly. But you'd wake up and see it and just not really be able to move or get out of bed or go investigate what it was. You just felt like you had to go back to sleep. This happened just a few nights ago here, and I'm wondering if there is a connection between the two. Time will tell, obviously. But the light was so bright that I was just really kind of put off by it because I was being woke up. And I took a look at this. I thought, because Bryce lives here with us, I thought, Bryce has opened the door, turned on the lights, and where did he get that weird light color from? And I looked at it. And
so you thought this was something Bryce did?
Yeah, I did. I didn't have any idea what was going on. I was annoyed at the idea of having that much bright light coming into a perfectly dark room where I was sleeping. But I was unable to get up, and it was almost as though I saw it and closed my eyes, and the next thing I know, I'm waking up the next morning wondering about it. And so I confronted him about it. I said, you know, what in the world were you doing last night? Why did you open our door and blah, blah, blah? But then, of course, I discovered when I got up that the door was locked. And so I asked Kathy if she had locked it. And she says, well, I locked it when we go to bed, after I'd confronted Bryce, of course. So it was just one of those strange, anomalous things. But it does parallel something that occurred, you know, like 20 years ago.
All right, now, when you have one of these events and you are paralyzed where you can't get up, does that scare you?
No, I didn't feel afraid at all. I just was more annoyed than anything.
What do you think happened? I mean, do you think you were abducted? What do you think happened when you went back to sleep?
Nothing. It wasn't an abduction event. It was... Well, I don't know what it was, but you know, the truth is that when this happened 20 years ago, it occurred off and on for several months before the actual contact occurred.
So do you think it's them saying, hey, we're on the way?
Well, maybe so. I just couldn't tell you. And that's what it was previously.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 years ago and 40 years ago. So it's something that is running parallel to that kind of event.
But 10 years ago, you did not have a meeting because of the events that we refer to as 9-1-1. On 9-1-1, on 9-11, when in 2001, when you were supposed to have this meeting, it didn't occur, but this tragedy in New York City did occur.
Yes, exactly right. And, you know, keeping in mind that the contact events don't happen on my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
They've always happened sometime in November.
Okay, so if they happen in November, then what's the connection to September the 11th?
Well, apparently it's a date that I'm supposed to just be watching.
Oh, I see. Okay, so but September 11 happened, and then in November, when you were supposed to have contact, it didn't happen.
No, nothing happened at all.
When you have contact with these people, they have told you in the past that they are from your home planet, and they have told you what your home planet is. I think our new listeners need to hear how you came to be here on this planet.
Well, you know, again, it's one of those unverifiable situations. But essentially, the way that it happened is that I was brought here and deposited into an abandoned farmhouse somewhere in, I'm told, the hills of Kentucky. The Army Corps of Engineers, Army Air Corps, because there wasn't an Air Force at that time, they descended on the house, and they took me to Fort Knox Medical Center, where I stayed at the hospital for I don't know how long, and then I was handed off to a fellow and his wife. This couple could not have children. And I never knew all the details about this for a very long time. I was told about some of these details during my contacts. I was told about some of the details through some of the retired men who had been privileged to the knowledge that sought me out. And I was also told some of these details after my mother died, which was I don't know, 20 years ago now, and that was when the last contact occurred. I was told she was going to pass away, when she was going to pass away, and that I was going to need to know the details of my existence. And so they told me, and then after her death, there was a similar story from those folks' point of view, the people there at the funeral, and it was quite a shocker. You know, it's one thing to have information handed off to you like this during a contact. It can be something that you would take a listen to and think, yeah, well, okay, but not give it a great deal of emotional strength. But then to have that same information given to you by members of what you thought were your family, it at that point becomes an emotionally charged issue. And when I heard about this information, I felt very strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can certainly imagine that you would. Now, you were told by the people who came from your home planet, you were told by them in a contact situation what your origins were, and they told you that you were deposited in this farmhouse, and then the Army Air Corps descended upon the house. They took custody of you, took you back to Fort Knox, and the rest is history. Why did the Army Air Corps descend on that farmhouse?
Well, I've wondered about that as well, and from what I can deduce, they had been told that they were to go there and pick me up, that they were supposed to be expecting me to be there. As usual with the Army, I shouldn't say as usual, but, you know, I'm just being facetious. They picked me up 12 hours later than they were supposed to, and I was frostbit over most of my body.
Who told them to go there?
Well, that's what I've wondered as well. And one of the men who was retired from the Army, I don't remember his credentials now anymore. It's been so long ago. But he told me that there was a project where they were going and retrieving children all over the country. That this event was taking place over and over again, and they had a special code name designation for it, and they picked up, take me in.
All right, we have stepped away from break. We'll be back right after this. The fantastic Kevin Smith Show. My guest is the fantastic Jerry Wills. And Jerry, we were talking about your origins. You, as a child, though, began having contact, didn't you?
Yeah, that happened, started about 11 and a half, 12 years old, right in there. Lasted for about 5 years.
And they didn't tell you at that time anything about your origins?
Well, they did once. There was some issue with my stepdad was not exactly a kind person. He was actually rather brutal at times, and terrorizing me and my mom. I don't think she would have called it terrorizing, but anyway, I was pretty upset. And when they saw the welts on my back from the belt beating that I'd gotten, they said that that was unnecessary, and that if I wanted to, I could go with them and leave. And the idea of leaving and leaving my mom seemed to be, you know, impossible. And they said, well, she's not really your mom. You were adopted. Well, I chose not to go. And I went back and asked my mother about this. She wanted to know who told me this. And I told her, and she said that I was never to speak to those people again, to stay away from them. And that I wasn't adopted, and she pulled out my birth certificate and said, look at this. This proves that you're my son. Well, being, you know, 13 years old, you don't really know anything about birth certificates and such. And as a result, I accepted that and laid it to rest. And they, of course, the people I was visiting with, the extraterrestrials, they accepted my choice and didn't pressure me any further.
Okay, now you've had a chance to look at your birth certificate since then. And does it still indicate to you that you were born to her, or does it indicate something else?
Well, it's basically blank. There's very little information on it. I don't know how to explain, but there's not very much information on this birth certificate. When you compare it to other birth certificates, it's essentially everything is left out.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are other people that I can't think of a name right now, but I can think of the fact that I have heard this. People that say they were part of this program and that they were left outside a base and picked up by the Army and you know, adopted by one of the officers.
Yeah, and I've heard this as well. The curious thing to me, and of course it isn't really curious insofar as much as why did they do this, but it's just curious that, you know, we don't know each other. In other words, you might be one of these people, and I don't know that you are, so we don't really know each other in that respect. I was told that was done intentionally so that we would not just take a look at the world events and go, this is nuts, get together, pool our abilities, because each of us have abilities, and decide to just sidestep the rest of the world and go live on an island somewhere and leave the rest of the world alone.
That sounds like a pretty good plan, actually.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a good plan to me as well. But I think the underlying truth was that we came here with some reason, some underlying reason for being here, and had we done something like that, there wouldn't be any hope.
Mm.
So we weren't allowed to know each other.
So what you're saying is that all over the place, living right next door to us, maybe there's someone else from Lanyalas, and we don't realize that. We don't know it because they are human. They look human because they are human. They're just from another place. Is that what you're saying?
Well, exactly. And it isn't just from, you know, the Tau Ceti system or, you know, Epsilon Eridani or, you know, any name of place. It's not that these people are from specifically that particular place. I understood it that there were people from various different places that were part of a larger collective of humankind that exists out among the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you know, it wasn't just one particular type of person.
One of the things we hear people suggest quite frequently is that some artifact is found, some fossil is found, and people suggest, well, if you did DNA testing on it, you'd be able to tell if it was ET or if it was terrestrial. And really, with the scenario that you're telling us, with a great number of extraterrestrials, that would not be the case. Their DNA would be the same.
Yeah, I think it would be within certain margins. There would certainly be a few differences, I would imagine, but by and large, it would have to be very similar. I don't believe people originated on this world.
Where do you think people originated?
I don't know where they originated, but I believe that the population of this planet did not originate here. And the reason we don't know that and find it difficult to accept is that history has been obscured to the point to where the only history we have only points in one direction. And perhaps the reason that history has been obscured is to keep us from knowing this as a fact. But there are enough clues out there to suggest differently.
Do you think that the majority of the ET species that are out there, do you think the majority are human?
No, I don't think the majority are. I think that there is an appreciable number who are, but from what I've been able to tell from my contacts, there are quite a number of different species out there, and they're quite fascinating. Some of them really don't care about what happens here. They're just curious to watch.
Uh-huh.
Others have their own agendas here, and then that falls into line with the people that are responsible for my presence. They had an agenda as well, but I believe their agenda was to help this world come into greater connection with those other worlds where humankind exists.
Well, it appears we're on the very cusp of that. At least to me, it appears that we're on the very cusp of that. But we're on the cusp of it right as we are also on the cusp of extinction. At our own hands. Extinction at our own hands.
It is ironic. It wasn't supposed to turn out this way.
Well, let me give you a Kevinism. You know what? You know my Kevinisms, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Life is not what you think it is, but what you think, it is.
That's a good Kevinism.
You have to think about that one. Life isn't what you think it is, but what you think, it is. Because how we think creates our experience and our interaction with whatever realities we face. So it's how we think that creates the experience we have. It doesn't create reality, but it creates our experience with it. And I would say how we've been thinking has created an awful experience with reality. Jerry, thanks for being with us this evening. Stay on the line with me for just a moment.
We'll.
All right, folks, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. I hope you enjoyed it. Be with us on Monday when we talk about the second big event, and we have a video of it that took place over Phoenix this week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.